and welcome to IVF BFF with me, Sian.
And me, Catherine.
A podcast about two friends on their respective IVF treatment in real time at the same time.
Join us as we lift the lid and demystify all the things to do with a fertility journey, sharing each stage as it happens, from the highs to the lows and everything in between.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. We're doing it.
We're doing it.
Yeah, first episode.
We're doing a podcast.
Like everybody else.
We've got a podcast now, guys. So, yeah. Welcome to our podcast. This is IVF BFF.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about our journeys trying to have a baby, both of us. Not together.
That would be a bit weird.
That'd be a bit much. And this is us. Should we start with how we met?
Yeah.
How we know each other. Right. So, Sian and I met like 10 years ago.
Probably about 10 years ago.
And we were both teaching drama.
Mm.
Teaching drama for kids.
It's interesting because, sorry, just to go back, when we were teaching together... we just like obviously went off and did our own thing. We weren't like particularly close when we were teaching, really.
I mean, we were mates.
But we weren't like, you know, like visiting each other all the time.
Yeah.
And like voice noting. Like it was fairly, I don't know, over the last year or so, probably, that we kind of, I saw you in a sort of forum.
Like a Facebook group.
Yeah, Facebook group. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, and you dropped me, you slid into my DMs. And you dropped me a little message, and I'm really glad you did. And you said, oh, kind of like, you're here too, sort of thing. How is it going? And I was like, oh my God, hi. And we kind of reconnected over that. And then we started messaging and love a voice note. So we started voice noting.
I mean, lots of voice notes there, which were lovely. Yeah. I'm so glad I reached out. Imagine, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Our global podcast wouldn't have happened. But yeah, so that's what happened. We kind of reconnected and you became my IVF BFF.
IVF BFF. Why? What does that even mean?
IVF BFF is something we saw on social media, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like this idea that, and it was like, send to your IVF BFF. And it's this idea that there's someone in your life that is maybe going through a similar fertility journey. there's no better word for it. Someone that's going through a similar journey. That you share stuff with, and they are your like confidant, they're your person. And I sent it to you, didn't I? And I was like, this is us, you're my IVF BFF.
It was really cute. I remember you being like, can you be my IVF BFF?
Yeah, I proposed to you.
I know. I was like, obviously.
We are both looking to grow our families at the same time and both going down the route of IVF treatment. Now we realise.
And it's both kind of what's really odd about it, which is why it feels like serendipity in many ways, is that so many things have been sort of synchronised.
Matching up.
Yeah. Sort of really weird things. And now we're both actually, weirdly enough, at the same hospital.
Yeah. So we started going down the process. I knew that you lived near me, nearish. And then you got referred to the same hospital that we're referred to, me and my husband. And then we started to have our appointments at roughly the same time.
Yeah.
Which is really scary.
Yeah, really.
Really weird.
Yeah, and in fact, this is a really weird one. I like to think if we hadn't reached out sort of during that time, we would have, no questions, bumped into each other.
We would have seen each other.
Yeah, last Tuesday.
At that appointment.
Yeah.
Because this is how mad it is. So we end up kind of doing things at roughly the same time. We submit our forms on the same day for IVF treatment. We get our NHS funding approved on the same day. And we get booked in for our consultant's appointment on the same day, an hour apart. So Sian is at 1:30, me and Carla at 2:30.
Yeah, and then literally I walked out, me and Andrew walked out and I saw Catherine and Carl and I was like, oh my God.
I know, it was like a social. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, and like leapt up from my chair, gave you a massive hug.
I got so teary. Yeah, it was so nice. And like we had the same consultant for that
Same consultant who actually apologised for like interrupting our conversation because it was time for us to go in and he was like, oh, am I interrupting? We're like, no, it's fine, sorry. But yeah, that hug was restorative on that day.
Needed it. Your 100%. Stress levels.
Oh my God, my Garmin, my fitness watch, it shows my stress levels. And I was just sitting in the chair, but it was like extremely high, very high stress, 95 on a scale of like 1 to 100. And I was like, I'm just sitting here, but like my heart, I kept like taking pictures of it. I was like, I'm going to want to remember this. Like my watch was like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, I think my heart rate was like 120.
Oh my gosh. That's like, you know.
That's like workout.
That is. 120 for half an hour, I get 8 vitality points for that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, no one's going to reward me for my waiting room anxiety.
Well, maybe that should be a new little workout on the apps, waiting room anxiety.
Yeah, so that's the way that our stories have weirdly aligned.
Yeah, really weird. And in terms of why, I suppose, that we want to do this is...
Why the podcast?
Yeah, because I guess, like, it could be seen as a bit like, oh, why are you, like, I don't know, airing your dirty laundry or whatever. I don't see it like that at all. I see it as... I know that you feel similar. I feel like something like this is is still quite taboo. I know it's better than what it used to be, for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like it's very much... I sometimes feel ashamed... Like, I shouldn't. Yeah, like, when I talk about, you know, if someone says, oh, and are you having kids? I feel like I'm not allowed to... It's not, like, the done thing because it makes people feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, isn't it? I can't bear the thought of anybody going through this on their own without anyone to talk to or not knowing who to talk to. And I know that, like, yeah, we joke, it might be like our friends and family listening right now, but
yeah,
and if it's just one person sat at home going, oh, I feel like that, or I'm in that position, or I'm going through this process, or even I'm not but I'm thinking about it, or I might, or I've got a friend that I can support better in a way, that's the thing, that's why I was really passionate about doing it. And also when we realised there was this weird synchronicity, I was like, well, we've got to do it. And we both kind of looked at each other and went, we've got to make something of this.
I think also, not like, we've spoken to lots of different people, like friends and stuff, and they've all been like, what? This is like insane. You've got to do it and make something of it.
And like, I've still got friends that didn't want to tell anyone that their baby was IVF. And that makes me so sad.
It is sad.
And that, it's such a big thing to, this is massive, right? This is our lives that we're, and it's a massive life change, hopefully. And it is a life changing thing, whether you have a baby at the end or not, let's face it. And it's so huge. Imagine, I just can't imagine someone not feeling able to talk to about it, or it must weigh so heavy on you. And I feel lighter when we've spoken, the more we've spoken to people, because at first you don't really know whether you want to share or how much you want to share, but the more we've spoken, A, the lighter we felt, B, the more people understand. I feel like we can't really expect other people to understand unless we tell them or explain or let them in.
And I think the other thing is that, you know, everyone's so vocal about, you know, oh, I am pregnant now and, you know, I am... It's like, well, what about the process leading up to it, actually? Because there's a lot involved in that that nobody sees. And it could, you know, even the people who maybe took only, I say only because of where we're at.
Air quotes.
Even people who have taken a few months or 6 months or a year, those people will have an idea of what it's like. But when you go past that point, it's actually sometimes it becomes almost harder to reach out to people because they just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And they don't get it. And I've found so much solace in talking to you, Catherine, like so much, honestly. Oh, a little bit of mosh. I think my life going through this would be so much more miserable, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do think it's important. And I think you said once that you saw someone post something in a forum saying, I feel so lonely.
Yeah.
I have no one to talk to. All my friends are pregnant and all don't get it. And I'm just like, my heart breaks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And at the very least, let us be your IVF BFFs. You know,
yeah.
If you're sat on your own at home and you're not sure how to process all of this, like maybe we can do that for you.
Yeah, and at least, you know, you might listen and go, God, I really understand that. I relate to that. Or, you know, I just think that, oh, come along on our journey with us.
Oh, yeah. I think that's also really important because there are so many great fertility podcasts out there, informative and fantastic, but a lot of them are people, families, women primarily, who have been through it. And so they're through it, they're kind of out the other side. A lot of them have their families, which is amazing. But a lot of them, it feels like that was a chapter and they're reflecting on it retrospectively.
Mm.
Whereas we kind of sat down and we said, I can't find anything about people going through it and in the midst of it. So we're doing it right now, kind of as it happens. We're sharing the wounds. Do you know what I mean?
It is a wound. I mean, actually, I found this out, that trauma, weirdly enough, that word is actually a Greek word and it's for wounds.
No way!
Yeah, and it's about, like, it's not actually the incident, it's about the response, the consequence of an incident that happens to you.
No way.
And I think that this is just full of it.
Like, yeah.
Full of trauma. And I think the best way to sort of help people through is, you know, to talk it through with your IVF BFFs.
Yeah. And so we aim with this to bring you all the updates kind of as they happen, especially because our stories are kind of matching up. So we should be kind of starting our treatment at roughly the same time, which means that we'll probably end up going through the process at the same time. So we're hoping to bring all the updates like right from when they happen. It's fresh, it's raw, it's real. And yeah, it's now.
And what's interesting as well is that we've both got entirely different stories and entirely different journeys. So, and it's interesting because even our treatments are slightly different, aren't they? Even that, it still ties up. And I think our possible egg retrieval, don't worry if you don't know what that means right now. I think it happens really quite, I don't know, within a few days or even a week, actually, of each other. So you're going to get the good, bad and the ugly.
Oh, yeah. What are we doing?
I know, I'm a little bit nervous.
It's fine. People will be kind. Please be kind.
Yeah, please. And do you know what? I think what's quite good about this is that if you don't want to keep updating people, this is selfish now. If you don't want to keep updating the same thing to loads of people, you can just be like, listen to the podcast this week.
Listen to the pod, guys. Just get us some more views and we'll tell you all about it.
Tell you all about it. You know, the statistics, may I refer to, say, well, it used to be 1 in 9 people who suffer, infertility. You've become a little bit better at it, actually.
I have. I've been throwing the in word around a bit more. Infertility this, infertility. But that, I think that also matches up with our different stories, which we'll come to.
Yeah.
But we both have a bit of a problem with using the word infertility.
Which is
interesting.
I don't know why. I really hate it. Yeah. But I think it used to be, I believe, the stats were like 1 in 9. This was a few years ago. And then it went to 1 in 7. And now I believe they've changed it now to 1 in 5. And actually, really? It's been breaking news. Have you seen this week?
Oh, God, yeah. All the headlines.
The headlines about fertility rates have decreased.
Dropping dramatically. And it's all women's fault, obviously.
It's all our fault.
All our fault, guys. Sorry.
We've, like, neglected, apparently, our sort of traditional role in the house. Yes. And we've gone out and lived incredible, crazy lives, which, you know, we have, I suppose. But
yeah.
Equally, you know, where's the man in all of these stories that we
well,
were saying that?
This is the thing, isn't it?
Let's go to, I think, yeah, why don't you tell us about, well, first, let's go from the beginning. How did you
start?
How did you and Carl meet?
So, Carl is my husband, and we met 9.5 years ago.
Whoa, and can I just say, when I said that, your face lit up.
You know, time flies when you are, yeah, really happy. And it's a bit like, I met Carl when we were 24. I was 24, sorry. He was a little bit older. He was 28, going on 29. So we met on a dating app, and then we went for a date in a pub in Wimbledon, and it was pretty much, that was it. Like, I saw him, he saw me. It sounds really cheesy, but really quickly I was like, this is the guy. And back then, of course, 24, it was always an if, a when we have kids, not an if we have kids. It was like, yeah, one day when we have kids, we'll do this, we'll do that. But at 24, like, I wasn't seriously thinking, I was just like, that is gonna be a chapter for us. And we'll get there, you know, when we get there. Then we got married when I was 27. And again, that still felt quite young. We were doing loads of different things, job-wise, career-wise. I changed careers a couple of times.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. And so it was all still so, we still felt so young. And so we didn't really get a lot of those questions. And then when we've been married for a few years, and now we've been married for 6.5 years. And then we get a few more questions and stuff, but we just always assumed it was in our future, but not for now, you know, for later. Also, I'm an IVF baby. So, well, my parents had a form of fertility treatment that is similar to IVF, and they don't do it anymore, but they put the embryos back in the fallopian tube. But this was, yeah, 33.5 years ago.
Amazing.
Which is amazing. And I've got a twin sister, because back then as well, they put 3 embryos back in my mum. And now, I'm sure we'll come to it, but it's very much a one-at-a-time policy, a one-in-one-out policy. So I always knew, I always had an understanding of IVF and of fertility treatment, and that's how I got here, and I knew that my parents had struggled. So, you know, you meet some people who said, oh, I just had no idea about any of it, etc. I think because of that, I did have an inkling, and not an inkling that we would need it, but I had an awareness of it, and that was how I first learnt about babies being made. My parents got an out, by the way, because, like, they didn't have to do the birds and the bees chat, because they were just like, yeah, you know, like, took a bit from mum, bit from dad, mixed it up in a Petri dish, and made you.
I have
and
to say, that is
clever.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, I just thought that's how all babies were made. So that was that. And then, yeah, we finally got to the place where we felt a little bit more settled, stable. You know, we did that. Not that you have to have all these things in order to have children. Mm. But for us, we got married, got a house. We got a dog. We got a dog called Sweep, who we adore. And I don't know, we just felt, and our jobs, I think crucially, our jobs became a little bit more, kind of stable and flexible enough. I kind of upended my work life, and I went from quite a steady 9-to-5 to running my own business, and I now run a theatre school for children. And part of that as well was in prep for having a family, and I was like, this is going to be the thing. It's going to be so much more flexible, and it's going to work really well with family life. And it, you know, that's done things for me. Not just to do with that, it's enhanced my life immeasurably anyway. But that's what I was thinking. So it's been in the works for such a long time. I think we were always looking at laying the groundwork to having a baby, but we finally felt like we were in a place where we were like, yeah, let's go for it. and started trying.
Oh yeah, that's
so sort of cringe.
Awkward bit. That yeah. word
trying, and everyone knows what it means. So yeah, it's like doing that. I've been on the pill for like 15 years, no break. Which at first is what I blamed it on when it wasn't happening. But I came off the pill and my periods came back within 6 weeks. And they were regular, which was great. And so I was like, oh, amazing. I was like, great, won't be long. The first month we actually started tracking properly, I was so cocky, I didn't buy tampons in the Sainsbury's shop. I was like, nah, see you later, guys. I won't need you for a long time. And I didn't buy any. And then my period came and I was like, oh my God, I have no tampons. So that was an error. That was just, but that was how cocky I was at the start, that I was like, well, we're going to have a baby soon and everything's going to change in our lives. So that was roughly kind of May 2023. Then, you know, fast forward and it's just not happening. And I think very quickly, and I think a lot of women will relate to this, and men as well, but I think especially women, very quickly I went, something's wrong. Like, what's not happening? What's not working? Carl was quite chipper about the whole thing and wasn't just, you know, was, which I probably needed. And he was like, it's fine. It's not been that long and it'll happen and all of this stuff. And he was... Yeah, I much quicker came to the conclusion that something must be wrong. And of course, not all the time, that there's not always something wrong. Sometimes it does just take more time. So we just carried on and carried on. And then actually, it was a friend on my Instagram who had been quite open with her IVF journey. They were doing IVF and she posted a story that said that it had taken them a year to get to the point of actually doing IVF. From the first doctor's appointment, or a year to be approved for funding, I think it was. And I just took a step back and I was like, whoa, is that how long it takes? And she was like, yeah, it can do. And she was like, you've got to go. You've got to, if you've got doubts, go to your doctor. So we actually went a little bit early before the 1 year mark, because in the UK, they say that couples should wait for a year of trying before seeking medical help.
Yeah.
But I had this inkling, and so we just went a little bit early. And luckily, our GP took us really seriously, and I was ready to fight my corner and be like, I want this test and this test. And she was just like, okay, yeah, great, let's do the testing. I remember the first time on the phone that I said to her, fertility. Like, oh, I'd like some fertility testing. That was weird then. I was like, whoop, yeah. Are we doing this?
Yeah.
I think I put the phone down and had a little cry.
Yeah.
But, like, that is quite, that's not unheard of in this story.
Oh, no, there's having, a lot of that.
Having a little cry every now and again. But, yeah, we got the blood test booked in for me and the semen sample for my husband. More on that later, because that there is comedy in that in itself. but we got those initial tests booked in, and everything on my side came back fine. Like, you know, all as it should be. And I was almost a bit disappointed. And yeah. Obviously I didn't want to find something wrong, but I was like, oh, okay. I was convinced they would come back saying, this is low. So with the first blood tests, for anyone that doesn't know, they test your hormones and they test your hormones, basically.
Yeah, your day, I think this is your day 21 test.
They do another one to check you're ovulating.
Oh, sorry. This is your day four yeah. test?
So they do two sets of blood tests. The first is on your, at the very start of your cycle. So the first couple of days of your period. And they test kind of your hormone levels. I need to say now that I'm not a medical professional, so I don't want to go too much into the details, because I'm sure there are experts out there that can talk better about this. But yeah, they check all your hormones, make sure that your body is, you know, working as it should. But everything came back fine. Then they did my day 21 test. Again, they said, yep, you're ovulating, your progesterone, because once you ovulate, a hormone called progesterone rises in your body, and that was high enough to show that I had ovulated. So that was great, but at the same time, I was like, well, what is it? And for some couples, of course, there isn't a clear cut on. And we had to wait a little bit for Carl's test. Just because of the area we're in, it was a choice of two hospitals and they both had quite long wait lists. But the whole time we were joking. We were like, it's not going to be you. It's not going to be Carl. Like, he's Mr. Health because my husband Carl is a personal trainer. He has never smoked. He doesn't drink really, like maybe one glass of wine a month. Doesn't really drink. Is so health conscious. So like, conscious of what he puts into his body, you know, takes pride in his diet and loves it, loves looking at nutrition and everything. Obviously super fit because he's a PT. And so we were like, well, you know, we know you're fine. And it just goes to show you just never know.
Well, I do want to say this actually, because it is a common misconception that I've heard a lot of people spout, sort of saying, you know, oh, if you do IVF, you can't be very healthy. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that go, and medical, you know, people as well, that go, oh, look at your lifestyle, and it can all help.
Yeah.
But that's what as well. So basically, his results came back, and they were all quite low. So they test for a man's sperm count, so how many sperm he has, motility, so whether they're swimming, and forward motility, whether they are swimming forwards, and morphology, whether they're a normal shape, you know, have they got a head that can get to the egg and through the egg, that sort of thing. And because all three for his came back low, and that was a real blow, I think, because the doctor said to us, the first doctor said, you know, it can be lifestyle. Obviously, they don't know him. And he was just like, God, like, what more can I do? But I remember when we got those test results, Carl was having a nap and his phone rang and it was the GP. And he was like, oh, God, what a way to wake up from a nap. And the GP couldn't really tell us much. And I think GPs are amazing. But they are general practice. And so she couldn't tell us much about the specifics. She just said, everything's looking quite low, so we're going to book you another test. I'm in the background going, ask for the printout. Because we're always told, you read on these forums and online and stuff, you know, ask for your results. And you can, and you should, from your GP at least, be able to ask for copies of your results. So we got a copy of our results. And we were kind of left to work it out for ourselves, really, which was so hard. And I remember, again, one of the first things I did was text Sian. I was like, everything's quite low. What do I do? And Sian's like, okay, don't panic. How low? Blah, blah, blah.
I think that was also the really hard thing as well, because it said, like, there was, like, different terms on the test that you and I were a bit confused by. Because we were like, is that sperm count or is that, what was it?
Like, the measure.
The measure. And I was like, yeah. I don't know what that means. And so funny. There's me also on Google. Yeah. I was actually on holiday going, right, got help.
Oh, God.
Look this up. And we just couldn't quite work it out, could we?
Yeah, I love that you're in on this as well. me, Carl and Sian were all trying to work it out. Sian on a sun lounger in, where'd you go?
Was it Greece? Yeah.
Yeah, you went to Greece.
Yeah, I was in Greece, yeah.
She's like, you know, having a cheeky marg and Googling my husband's sperm results. Love it.
I was very invested. Very invested.
Well, like we were saying, you were a lifeline and your IVF BFF, I feel like, is a proper lifeline. And yeah, thank God for you through all of this. You know, I know we've said that before. But we were kind of left to work it out for ourselves, which I do get. And, you know, all they said was, they're quite low, we'll do another one in case it's a bit of a fluke.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was. And especially because it was a blow for Carl. And there's a whole other conversation that I'm sure we'll have about male fertility, which we just do not talk about. No. How many other men are going to be receiving similar news and feeling like they've got nowhere to turn, like it's just them, because men, as we know, aren't as forthcoming in talking. And then it's so funny, whenever we get these kind of results or have a big day, a lot of the time I've been to the theatre afterwards. And like, it just so happened that I was seeing my family and we were seeing Guys and Dolls in London, which was amazing. But we were both just sat there like, as well, our families knew that we were going through some initial testing, but it wasn't the right time to tell them. And like, and we didn't know what was going on. So we were like, okay, well, like, we'll just get on with the day. And I remember us both sitting in this dark auditorium watching this amazing show, but being like staring into space blankly, like kind of trying not to cry. And it was really depressing.
Yeah, that is really depressing.
It was really weird. And it's like that thing of like, life just carries on and you just have to go with it. But it's like, and I kept looking across at him and just being like, is he all right? But at the same time, because I had asked already for a referral to a fertility clinic. And I had to ask twice for this. So the first doctor said, no, we have to wait until his test is done. And then prior to his test results coming back, I'd already said, look, I would like this referral to this hospital. Because I said, well, if my husband's test results are not good, you know, are low, we will get a referral anyway. And I said, and even if they're fine, I still want that referral. I would still like the extra investigations that your GP can't do. And then this amazing doctor was like, yep, that makes perfect sense. I'm happy to do that for you. I'll put the referral through now. Again, another really big day. I was like, oh my goodness, okay, we're being referred to a fertility clinic, which makes it feel, again, a little bit more real. And so at the same time, we had correspondence. So Carl's getting his results back. And at the same time, we're getting correspondence through from the hospital that we're at and the assisted conception unit, ACU, which is the fertility clinic at the hospital. And so at the same time, they often need to do all the tests again anyway. So they booked us in for a whole new set of tests and they've been amazing, so good. And we are so fortunate that with our hospital, we've not had to wait for anything. We've been able to book appointments and, you know, have the best care whenever, you know, we haven't had to have huge waits for stuff, and the communication's been great. And when the NHS works, it's bloody amazing and we need it and it's so necessary.
Totally.
So yeah, that was already underway. So we booked in the other one with the GP, but actually Carl was going to have another semen analysis done at the hospital. I had all my bloods done again. And I also, in the middle of this, we went on a massive holiday to California, which actually came at the perfect time. Because as well, we got back from our holiday and I knew it was kind of all systems go with fertility. So we got back home. Carl had his second semen analysis. I had my blood test done. And I had a hycosy.
Do explain.
So hycosy is a super fun test.
Oh, no.
I didn't find it too bad, but the letter they send you makes it sound really scary. But you go in for an internal scan. So that's, I think people call it Wonder. I call it dildo cam.
It is a dildo cam, essentially.
It looks like a big dildo. And you know what's happening with that dildo cam.
Yeah.
So they put it up, yeah? Sorry, that sounds so like crude, doesn't it? But it's an internal scan and they look around with this big old, yeah, wand. They look at your womb, which is super clever. I mean, I saw my womb on the screen and I was like, wow.
Don't you think it looks like, I don't know, like there's so much space in it?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's like, I don't know, like you could
space
lose
for a baby.
Feels like you could like lose things in there.
What, like your keys?
Yeah.
Like, where are my keys? Oh, they're in my uterus. It was like amazing. They check your ovaries and they can tell you, because it's a scan, they can tell you what they see straight away. And she told me that my womb. She's like, your womb looks great.
Oh, you love that, don't you?
Yeah, I was like, thanks. Yours too. That's so awkward. I was like, amazing. Like, she said, that is a textbook womb.
That is so funny.
But, yeah, and then she counted my follicles, and I've got a lot of follicles. So that's a good thing. Well, we think it's a good thing. There's no guarantee, but your follicles are in your ovaries, right?
Yeah.
And they are the little sacs that could potentially grow an egg.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of follicles. I have 30 in total, 14 on one side and 16 on the other.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And so, and I kind of knew that because, again, they can test for a hormone called AMH, which stands for anti-mullerian hormone. And your AMH is, again, an indicator, of depending on how high it is, of how many eggs you might have left. So my AMH I knew was relatively high, so I kind of knew that. But everything was tip-top in my womb and my ovaries. And then they, in a high cosy, they flush a liquid through your fallopian tubes. So this is to check that your fallopian tubes are open and they're not blocked due to scarring, etc., which some women have. And of course, if your fallopian tubes are blocked, an egg is not getting down and a sperm is not getting up there. Mm. But again, my tubes were open. So I had that. Then we had the roundup appointment with the gynecologist who sat us down, talked through everything and said, yep, Catherine, these are your results. They're all looking exactly as they should be. Bam, bam, bam. And then they went to Carl's result. She said, yeah, she said, these are the results. And again, they are low. So they were the same. Sperm count had crept up a little bit, but not enough to be it's significant, really. So that was still low. And then motility had gone down and morphology was the same. So that's when she said, your path forwards will be IVF with ICSI. And that was a moment as well. Mm. Carl also had an extra blood test, which we don't have the results of yet. And that's to check out some chromosomal things to make sure that his sperm don't carry any kind of abnormal chromosomes, that sort of thing. And also, there was something else the blood test was meant to do.
Was it antibodies or something?
Oh, no, it was hormones. It was like FSH.
Testosterone.
Testosterone.
Yeah.
FSH, though, they test that in men.
So why do they need FSH? Sorry for medical people listening.
I don't know. If you're listening and you know,
let us know.
Get in touch.
Yeah.
But they did all his hormone panel, but we don't have that back yet because that's got to go to a separate lab. Then he had an ultrasound scan on his balls.
Which is, by the way, must be so alien.
Yeah.
Like, they never really investigate men.
We are very lucky that, again, we're at a really great NHS hospital and they offered this to us. Not everyone gets this and a lot of people have to pay privately and fight for it, but they offered it to us. And they did find what's called a varicocele, which is in the testicles. There's an enlarged vein that is potentially blocking sperm from getting out, being made properly and getting out. So it's very common. Again, it's harmless, but they found that. And they passed all that to the consultant that we eventually went to see. So we had that roundup with the gynecologist and then we went to the theatre again.
That is like a thing you've just got
to
do.
Like, we just got to do now. Just go see a show. And we went to see Come From Away, which is a beautiful show.
Love it.
But so emotional. Mm. Again, I find myself in a theatre with my family again. They love a show, my family. They love a musical.
Like a matinee, don't they?
They love a matinee. And then we went to Pizza Express after. Oh. Went to Pizza Express after and we were like filling them in with everything because we have told them everything now. And Carl was like, this is so ironic. We're talking about all this tucking into some dough balls. like ripping apart these dough balls. And I did not even clock that, but we're like, yeah, like that was hilarious. And yeah, that such an emotional show. And I just sat there and again, like try not to cry. I could have cried. It would have been fine.
To us, if you cried, everyone would be like, gosh, yeah, she's really in touch with her emotions. She really is moved. The story is really powerful. Yeah. She really touched her.
So yeah, then we had our follow-up with the consultant.
Last Tuesday.
Oh, then we applied for our IVF funding.
Oh yeah.
Which we got told could be the slow bit. Mm. The slow bit being like, could take 2 to 4 weeks. We were like, fine.
No problem.
That's fine. And then it took one day.
Yeah.
Again, this is not the experience of everybody. And so I want to acknowledge that. So many people have to wait so long. But again, when the NHS works, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it all came back. We were approved for NHS funding within a day. And then we had our appointment last Tuesday. So what are we now? Mid-October, end of October. Yeah, so then we had our consultant appointment. You go in for an appointment with a consultant, which lasts about an hour. There might be a scan. Again, I didn't have dildo cam at that one because he was like, we've seen yours recently, you know. It's like, you're fine. He's like, we don't need to scan you. And then we laid out the treatment plan with the nurse after that for another hour. So that was a good 2 hour appointment. And then, yeah, so we are doing a form of IVF called ICSI, which is where they take one sperm and inject it into the egg. So traditional IVF, again, I'm sorry if I butcher this because I'm not a doctor, but traditional IVF, they take the egg and the sperm in a controlled environment like a Petri dish and they let them find each other. Whereas with ICSI, they literally take one sperm and inject it into the egg so they can guarantee that egg and sperm meet. Because it sounds like that's not been happening for us. That's what's not been happening.
And also, that's the video. I'm pretty sure everyone's seen this video online with the sperm being injected.
Yeah, you see like under a microscope in films and stuff, like a big needle going into an egg. That is actually ICSI. So yeah, we got a diagnosis of male factor infertility. and we got told that we'd be, yeah, we knew by then that we'd be doing ICSI. And ICSI, I-C-S-I, stands for...
Oh, I don't know it either. Intro, I'm going to guess it. Intro... Well, I was going to say
there's
semen,
a cyto,
but...
Cy something...
Vitro insemination is definitely the last bit.
Okay.
I reckon.
Do you want to know?
Yeah, go for it.
Intracytoplasmic sperm injection.
Oh, okay, I was completely wrong.
You were wrong. So we are doing ICSI.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, good. So when we got these results and we had a clear picture of what the problem was, it's really hard because it was obviously not what we wanted to hear, but at the same time there was a bit of validation for me certainly, and I felt like, oh well, there it is, of course it's not been happening. But then as soon as we got those results, people did start to take us a lot more seriously and go, oh, okay. Which again, makes me really feel for those that don't get a clear cut answer. Mm. But we're feeling good, nervous, scared, excited. There's so much. It's just been so much to process. For us, it kind of went bam, 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 bam. And it's been so quick, which is fantastic. We're so lucky. But there's been so much to process and to take in over 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. And I keep saying to you, don't I? I keep saying, why do I feel so tired? Like, I have felt exhausted. Like, I just need to go to bed. I just need to, like, shut the blinds, shut away. Like, I felt physically, and like, I'm like, oh, my back hurts. So I think physically, my body feels like it's been processing a lot. But we are hopeful, we are excited, and we're like, hey, this is how we're going to have our babies.
I know, I do, I find it so funny because I think before all of this, I certainly was like, we're going to have like, oh, three babies? Maybe three, maybe two, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like you can just add them to basket.
Yes, I'm like, just like an Amazon order.
Yeah, like but I'm ready now, like ready. Let's have these babies and we'll have, I remember going, it'd be really good to have them in the summer because my work chills out in the summer.
Oh my God.
As if.
Yeah, and also I feel like we'll just have, even if I have one, I am going to be the most grateful in the world.
Well, we say that, especially now as well. Now we know what we know. We say if we were to have one, we'd be the luckiest.
I genuinely think I wouldn't stop looking at baby and being like, this is a miracle.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
That's us. That's where we're at. And we're looking to go for ICSI, hopefully starting in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do you go in? Us. In January. When do you go in?
It depends on my period.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
shall we chat about our protocols in a bit?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, let's do you first.
All right, let's do that.
Right.
So I have to refer to my phone because Andrew knows this. I'm terrible with dates. How bad is that? No. I am really bad with dates. Like, I can't, I think maybe because of, I'm blaming COVID, obvs. But with COVID, it just threw everything in my mind. But basically, me and Andrew met in, we were a fish in 2018. We also met through
a fish. Official.
A fish. Sorry, official?
Made it sound like you're a fish.
Oh, yeah, we weren't a fish.
Official.
We were official. Sort of in 2018. It was very unexpected when I met Andrew. And, I'm not going to say it. Or it might be that person. No. I'm not going to say it. Oh, well, I'm going to have to say it now, aren't I? I was going to say that, you know, sometimes when you're genuinely not looking for something.
Not looking. Oh. Just like you get pregnant when you're not thinking about it.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. Some people do get pregnant when they're not thinking about it.
Well, yeah, but then that's just luck, isn't it?
But you met Andrew when you weren't looking for him.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I say that, but I was on an app.
Okay.
So, but, look, it doesn't matter. I was kind of like loosely dating and seeing what happens, and we met on New Year's Eve, actually. Yeah.
Oh, which that's nice.
It was really cute. And it was a really good system because I was going to go out in the evening.
Yeah.
And he was going to go out in the evening, but we'd met before all of that. So it meant that like we have like a really good reason to not stay. I've got to go now.
So you can get an out if you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember like meeting him, being like, ooh, quite like him. Like Scottish, love his accent. Love it. We both kind of gravitated towards each other quite a lot, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like we had a lot of fun when we went out. We were quite wild together.
Were you?
Yeah. We were quite wild. Yeah. We went to like XOYO together.
Where's,
in Shoreditch.
What's that?
That's a lot, like, oh, that's in Shoreditch.
Is that a cool person
place?
It's
a cool person place. I'm not cool anymore. But yeah, we like...
That's why I've never been there.
It was really fun. Like, we had such a good time and we went on loads of holidays and we were very spontaneous and we just had the best time. The thing that really won me over about Andrew is he just didn't have me. I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah,
it just made me laugh all the time, which was great. And then we moved in together, and then, you know, he proposed to me in Paris in front of the, I know, in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Cute.
So cheesy, but love it. It's iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
So that was lovely. And then we got married in Italy in May 2023. So we've been together a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we are recently kind of married. So 2023 was a really hard year for us because, you know, prior to that, I'd changed jobs. Like you, was thinking, you know what? I love my acting career. Not that I was particularly busy all the time at all, but I loved it. But I was like, my dream of wanting a family and wanting to settle down is now more important than that. And I kind of gave in to that and was like, do you know what? I think I am going to do what I think I'm quite good at, which is teaching, you know. So luckily I got a really amazing opportunity at a school, secondary school teacher now, teaching drama, which I love. And it was sort of in 2023 actually that we kind of found out like one of a, you know, a close family member was quite ill, and that was really, really tough, on all of us. And we decided to, we were actually going to get married in 2024, last May, I know, but we moved it. Like the wedding venue that we were going to get married in, they didn't have the same venue last Easter, but they did have like a smaller venue not far away in Italy. And we got married in 2023. But all of that in my head was like, actually, that's going to work perfectly because we will have, you know, gotten married. We would have, you know, moved into our house. Like, all of it was perfect. I was like, baby comes next, right?
Yeah.
I think since Andrew proposed to me, I'm a slightly bit older than you. I'm 35.
Mm.
So when he proposed to me a year before, about a year before, I was acutely aware of my own age and fertility and what that is going to look like and family planning. And I actually remember in COVID freaking out about it quite a lot. Yeah. Because I was like looking up online, like, oh my God, like fertility drops at 35, you know, like falls off a cliff.
Which it doesn't.
No.
Which we know that. But it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is scary. So I think, in a weird way, me and Andrew are on totally different paths because, well, sorry everybody to hear this. We were, I guess I was trying since we got proposed to, right?
Cool.
Yeah, which he was like, if it happens, it happens. Great. I don't want anyone to think that there was no consent.
Like, he was up for it.
He was up for it, but he was like, but it's chilled. Like, yeah, we just, if it happens,
meanwhile, Sian is not chilled.
No, that is honestly what happened.
Really?
Yeah, I started, I think, the first month of us, you know, just seeing what happens, like you, I genuinely thought, this is it. I'm pregnant.
Yeah,
I
actually
went. Yeah, I went to Superdrug after work and I thought, might as well buy a freaking pregnancy test.
Gonna need it.
It's like period due tomorrow, but it's obviously gonna show I'm pregnant. No, absolutely not. And I was like, right. Basically, didn't work. Like, I mean, who am I? Do you know what I mean? Like, it does happen for some people, but majoritively, that isn't gonna be the first month.
I feel like not many people know that though, and we're not prepared for that because at school, I don't know about you, but in sex education, all I was told is, like, do not have unprotected sex because you will get pregnant. And the fear of getting pregnant was, which I know back then, I do understand why they don't tell a whole bunch of teenage girls that it's quite hard to get pregnant sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I do understand that, but the fear was in us. We were like, God, well, can't get pregnant.
You do freak out about those things.
So I think that's why we're not prepared for it on that first month, and that's why it's a shock, maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, so basically that didn't happen, and then I remember being quite upset about it, and Andrew was like, Sian, we're getting married in a few months, and, you know, things are pretty stressful right now, you know, let's park it. So I was like, okay, fine, let's just see what happens. I stopped tracking and just see what happens. As soon as we got married, I'm on it. I'm back.
She's back, baby.
I'm back. Was using those apps. I think I had three at the same time.
Oh yeah, I've got three on my phone right now.
Me too. But I wasn't doing, I did eventually do the ovulation sticks, but I definitely was more like, sort of, I was very much in the dark about it all. And you know how these apps have these algorithms, but actually everybody's different. So actually that wasn't very helpful. Anyway, I realised I felt I had a gut feeling something wasn't right. Andrew, like in similar way probably to Carl actually, Andrew was very naive to it all. He was kind of like, look, we've had a really tough year. You know, you need to give us some slack. You need to give it a break. Let's just, again, go on holiday.
Relax.
See what happens. Because that's what happens to everybody else and it'll happen. Yeah. And it didn't. We have a terrible tendency to book holidays on my period. Honestly, the last three or four, I've been, like, expecting my period. which has never been great, because then I still get quite upset when my period arrives, you know. So obviously on holiday, there's my period arriving, me getting upset.
Yeah.
Great, good one, good vibes on the holiday, you know. So it's not ideal, but eventually I dragged us to the doctors the day after Boxing Day last year. Took us to the doctors, and Andrew was like, we don't need the doctors, it's fine, like there's not an issue, we haven't really been trying that long. And I mean, in my mind we had, but from his mind he was like, well,
like
not really.
Yeah.
But in my head I'm like, it should still have happened, like, sorry everyone listening, we were having sex regular enough that it should have happened in my mind. We went to the doctor, the GP, together. She was tough. She was the definition of tough love, I feel.
Aww.
She wasn't horrible. She wasn't at all. She did listen and took it seriously. But I think she kind of probably felt I was maybe overreacting slightly, because I did quite get a little bit upset in the appointment. And she was just very like, look, we'd book you in some tests. She was like, I got pregnant at 38, so don't worry.
Good for you.
I know. I'm like, great. But our tests, it took us a long time to get seen. We had a slightly unfortunate time of it, I think, in that we feel like we were put in a sort of holding pen where I wonder whether they thought, well, is this really an issue? Let's just wait. Let's see what happens. I had some blood tests done, like yours, came back fine. Andrew had his sperm analysis, but we kept saying we would like the results, but they wouldn't give us our results.
Yeah.
So we had to wait something mad, like 6 months.
Which I think is normal, because at the hospital we're both at, we had the same thing, didn't we? But the difference was, and it said in the letter, we will not give you any results before an appointment. I don't know why, it just seems to be a thing. But the difference is, with the hospital we're at now, we got those results within a couple of weeks, because we could have an appointment within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But when you're waiting for something like 6 months, that's tough.
It was really hard. And because your mind goes everywhere, it goes to the darkest places. You just don't know what's going on, what's happening. I actually, during that 6 month wait, also had a HSG, which is the sort of sister to the Hycosi, very similar. They stick, you know, a catheter up you and shoot dye. Mm. I didn't have the greatest experience, just because I have slight complications down, like trying to, you know, it's so personal, but I have slight complications when it comes to like smears and things like that.
Yeah.
I find that really hard and quite difficult. I just found that not so nice, but it was fine. Got through it, it was all right. And then eventually we did have our appointment, but because we were so pent up from waiting so long for it, and then it didn't help that when we were there, you know, we had to wait half an hour to be seen, which I know is probably normal for lots of people, and I again understand NHS funding, understaffing, but you know, you've got two very worked up patients sitting
it's
in
emotional an, the yeah. whole thing about this is all an emotional process.
Yeah. And so we were like freaking out in this appointment. And then we went in there, and the doctor went through all our results and said, well, they said with me that it all looks good. All looks good. They said I had a weird indentation in my uterus, but that could be a fibroid. But then she looked at the scan and said there was nothing there. So she doesn't think that's the case.
Mm.
So I was kind of like, again, like, is that definitive?
Is that not?
Totally, there's me then, obviously, for the next few months, Googling fibroids, you know. Then with Andrew's results, they came back pretty average, apart from one part, the morphology was slightly lower. But she said to us, I don't really know why it's not happening for you. Like, people get pregnant with these results all the time, which I don't know whether that helped or not.
That's hard.
I know. So I'm like, so what is wrong? Well, we don't know. And then I said, is there any more investigations that we can do? And she said, probably not. So she said, I think, you know, I'll refer you for IVF. Because let's be honest, all roads lead to IVF. Like, there isn't really any other treatment that they can do, because I do ovulate. My hormones are fine, you know. That Andrew's is pretty much fine. So it's really weird. And she said, well, what would you like? Would you like to be referred to, you know, this hospital or this hospital? And I knew you were being referred to the particular one that we're at.
Yeah.
And I was like, that one, straight away. That's the one I want
to be. My friend's there. Can I go there, please? not just because I'm there.
Yeah, but that would be... But it was. You told me how good it was. Mm. And I was like, I need that now. Because we're losing faith. And luckily, like you, with the IVF funding, went through really quickly.
Same day. They called me and I didn't want to text you. Did I tell you this?
Yeah, I know, because I freaked out.
Yeah, because I didn't want to text you to say that we'd had our funding approved, even though we just had the call. Normally I'd be like, Sian, da, 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 because I put the phone down. The first thing I said to Carl was, they better call Sian next. And then I was like, I'm not going to text her until she tells me. So I didn't give anything away that we'd had ours approved. Because I thought if we'd had ours approved and you hadn't heard, that would send you spiraling,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Because for anyone that doesn't know, in the UK, certain people get IVF on the NHS. It's not everybody, and it's a massive problem because depending on where you live, you're eligible for different sorts of levels of treatment, different numbers of rounds, and some people aren't entitled to any, which is a huge problem. But we had to apply for our IVF funding, and it has to go through what they call your ICB, which is an integrated care board, which are the NHS people in your area that decide where all the money goes. So we knew it would be fine, but it's still a process of applying for it. So yeah, when I got that call, I was like, I do not want to tell you. And then you were like, oh, I've had a missed call from the hospital. Wonder what that's about. And I was like, yes, that's what it will be.
And that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I was so happy and relieved. And that was a really good day, obviously, to get that. That was really good. Because I don't know about you, but it feels like you're climbing a mountain and you're kind of... you're getting your spikes put in, you know, next step forward. Mm. And I feel like me and Andrew had stagnated in the same place on this mountain for so long that we were like, should we turn around and just go back down? And then we had our sort of, that was your follow-up appointment last Tuesday, but the last week was our first appointment with the hospital, and they were just amazing. Like, I cannot praise them enough. They just gave us all the time in the world, and this particular consultant, you know, he just normalized it all and was just so caring, and he pretty much said exactly what the, you know, doctor before said. He said, I don't think it's worth Andrew doing another test, because in what I can see is there's a slight abnormality there. But he said, to be honest, my years of experience has taught me that if even one value is just slightly lower, we always do ICSI. So we're doing ICSI as well. But he said, but I'll be honest, I'm not convinced whether it is a male factor thing for you, could be an unexplained thing for you. In a weird way, the thing that I've been grappling with, certainly over the last week or so, is... it's processing all of it. It's also, we don't understand why. And I understand that, you know, for me, certainly 35 times of the essence, but we've just got to get on with it. And that's the treatment. Is it really what we want to do? Really? Probably not. Do I really want to be going down this route? No, is the answer. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm currently find it easier, a bit like you, to batten down the house, you know, pull the blinds down, get in bed, and just not, like, talk to anyone about it, really. I want to, but I think there is an uncomfortable truth here. We don't know if this is going to work. And everybody kind of... Sorry.
Oh. Oh, mate.
Sorry.
Don't apologise. It's fine.
I think... That's the uncomfortable truth. And we've got to be positive. I want to be positive, but equally, I think we can't just say, brilliant, that's so great, that's going to be the answer to all your troubles, because we just don't know.
There's no guarantee. That's the thing. It's like, there is no guarantee in this. No one can tell us it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Because we hope it will.
Mm.
And I believe it will, but no one can tell us that. For sure, right?
I know.
And that's the hard, hard truth. That's the hard truth about IVF, right?
Yeah. And it is a marathon.
Scary.
It is scary. I think if you catch me on a good day, I can be like, yeah, it's exciting. But most of the time, right now, where I'm sitting, I'm terrified. You know? Because I don't really want to be doing it. But I am equally very appreciative that we've got the funding. I'm appreciative that, you know, we're in this amazing hospital. I'm so appreciative of Andrew. Like, he has been such a support. I'm just so appreciative of all of those things. But I guess, like, each day is just, you don't know what's going to trigger you. Or,
and I think the thing is, those two things can exist at the same time, right? So we can be really, really scared, and we can be really, really grateful for the support, for the medicine, for the partners, for, like, all of that. It doesn't take away from the fact that this is big.
And I guess it is, yeah, I think also it was interesting you were saying that Carl said to you about this wall. And I can always refer to it, because I think it is, there's no other way to describe it.
So this is my wonderful husband, who is, again, I'm so proud of Carl.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so proud of him. He's like my absolute hero. And the way, especially because of our situation with the male factor. At first, I said, do you mind me telling people about it? He was like, no, we should be talking about it. Men don't talk about it. And then he was like, but are you telling everyone about my sperm? And I was like, well, yeah, but you said I could. And he's like, ugh. But, and so he's been through a real kind of, you know, obviously a grappling with it all. But he has been so amazing with, again, the more we share, the lighter we feel, and the more it might help other, and the more people come forward and say, oh, my son is ICSI, or my wife had IVF, or, and the men start talking about it. And he, I just, I cannot, I'm in awe of him. He's a superhero. And everything we do say on this podcast is approved by our husbands, I should say. He said this thing that was really, like, a really powerful image for me. He said, I just feel like we've got to have our walls up a little bit. And he pictures us being in this almost like a fort. And he's like, there are big walls around us, and we've built these walls not to shut anybody out, but to protect us. And there's a drawbridge. It's a really fancy castle.
Oh, I like it.
But sometimes we pull up the drawbridge, and sometimes it's down, but sometimes, and we can peer over the wall and kind of go, oh, that's what's going on. Okay, but then we go back down and we can, and we're sheltered.
It really helps me, because that's how I feel, certainly. And I know Andrew feels the same, in terms of, like, you know, keeping us together and united and protected together.
So what's next?
Yes, okay. So we are doing a long protocol.
Okay, so protocol, I'm sure, welcome to the science bit. I'm sure we'll get into this in...
maybe next episodes.
Yeah. Or when we can convince an expert to come on and...
oh, yeah.
Experts, get in touch.
Yeah.
And speak about all of this. But protocol means your treatment plan.
Yeah.
So we're on slightly different treatment plans. You can either be on a long one or a short one. And depending on your situation, it will be what's right for you. I was told that both are the same, the same outcomes, you know, but it's got to be tailored for you and your body and your situation. So you start earlier than me. So do you want to just briefly explain what happens now?
Yeah, I do the weirdest thing imaginable that is so ironic. Go back on the pill, everyone. In December, I've got to go back on the pill, and that's the beginning of the process, because they essentially need me to go on the pill so they can manage my cycle, because we start stims, which is our injections. That's when we start injecting ourselves.
And stims means stimulating the ovaries.
The ovaries.
Right? Yeah. Because again, there are so many in the trying to conceive world, there are so many... So much jargon, so many like acronyms like TTC and STIMS, and there's a lot of, and I don't sometimes know all of them. STIMS is the injections. So you'll sin in TV programs and everything. That's when you start the injections. So you start STIMS.
So yeah, so it's STIMS according, this is if my period goes as it should do. STIMS will start in January. 2nd of January, actually. So our
Happy New
Year's.
Year.
I know, Happy New Year to us. It's going to be a very interesting New Year's Eve. So we're just, so that's happening in January, and then possible egg collection towards, I think, the end. Isn't it towards your, same similar time to you? Towards the, or is it mid?
No, I think it is end, but you inject for longer, I
do, I do it for, I think, nearly... 3 weeks or 2 to 3 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, my process is a little bit different in the sense that I'm on short protocol because I've got a lot of follicles, I'm at risk of overstimulating.
Which is a serious thing, actually.
Yeah. Actually, it can make you really ill and it can be really risky.
Yes.
So they want to make sure that your ovaries don't go absolutely mental and that not all 30 follicles... go mad and produce loads of eggs. I don't start injecting until the middle of January.
Oh my God, you've got a...
I know.
Look at that. That's nice, isn't it?
Lovely.
I'll be teaching you the injections.
I know, you'll be like a dab hand by then. I do two a day after the sixth day of injections.
Yeah, I think I only do one.
So there comes a point where I do one in the morning and one in the evening.
Right.
And they are scanning us through the injection period, right?
Yes, like, every few days, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Continually, like, monitoring...
how they're looking.
How our follicles are. Yeah, because what you don't want is to be not responding properly to medication or over-responding, over-stimulating. So they do monitor... And then I've been given roughly the same, again, mine is so much more up in the air because it depends on my period, but I've been given roughly the same time scale as you.
Yeah.
I inject for about 10 or 12 days.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then I go in at roughly the same time as you for egg collection. So we might be there together. We'll be like, woohoo. Yeah.
All right, mate.
So yeah, that's who we are, where we are.
What's going on.
And what's coming up?
Ooh.
Like I say, if it helps one person sat at home not feel as lonely, then it's a good thing.
Just want to give them a big hug.
I know. So if you're in our boat, in our storm, then we hope you're okay. And we can be your IVF BFFs.
Always.
So we'll try and update when there's stuff to update.
Yeah.
When there's stuff we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can convince some experts to come on.
That would be really cool.
That'd be lovely.
I'd love our consultant to come on.
Oh, Dr. Thomas.
Oh, I love Dr. Thomas.
Tom.
He listens to podcasts.
He could listen to ours.
I think if we told him it, he would.
Great.
I reckon. Hopefully, I said that, he'd probably go, no, thank you.
Let's book him. What was nice, we'll leave you with this. Mm. When our consultant, one of the consultants, Dr. Thomas, came to come and get me and drag me away from Sian and the big old chat and hug and cry we were having in the waiting room, I said, oh, she's my friend, we know each other. And he went, oh, great. He said, you'll probably end up having babies at the same time.
Oh, I know.
And I was like, yes. Yes, we will.
That's the vision.
Make it happen, Dr. Thomas.
Yes, we need this to happen, please. Yeah.
So, yeah, all the love to everybody. Hope you're doing all right.
And as you say, actually, Catherine, have a bath and have a good glug of water.
Oh, it fixes everything. Yeah. Have a bath, have a glass of water, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.